Namaste and in lock catch, and welcome into this week's edition of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and as always, I want to remind you of what those two phrases, of course, they probably sound a little foreign to you, but what they mean. Namaste comes from the Sanskrit, it's called Brahmi, and it means the divine in me recognizes the divine in you. In La Ketch comes from the other side of the world, the Mayan culture, and it means I am another you. Now, these are two ancient languages, ancient cultures that have this respect for one another that we've lost today. So whenever you can, have that in your mind, in your heart, as you're greeting others, and see what kind of difference that makes in your life, just to have that awareness. Test it. Don't believe me. Find out for yourself. All right? Cool. Well, this week's guest is Dr. Mark Cooper. He's a wonderful gentleman with a lot of history, and as you can tell, and he also has been a dentist. He's got multiple degrees in organizational development, healthcare, philosophy, ontology, self-differentiation, transformation. He is the president and CEO of the Mastery Company. He's also the principal of the Eldering Institute, and his passion is sharing the wisdom for elders. Mark, glad to have you here.
Good to be here. I like your introduction. I have a thought about what you said.
Let's hear it.
Was you said it's lost. And I say, no, it's not. It's suppressed. And the job of an elder is to take the top off and have that more fully expressed. That's the contribution elders could make.
Absolutely.
I think it's missing in the culture. I think it's missing in the world. I think we look at the world. Do you see any eldering going on? So I believe it's a time that's come.
Absolutely. And you know, I've always had respect for my elders. Even as I was younger, I hung out with people 10, 15, 20 years older than me. I have several mentors today that are 20 years older, in their 80s, and wonderful, gifted, knowledgeable, just experts, right?
That's not the culture. The culture, on the other hand, is elder means older to them. And this culture is not about getting older with grace and poise and knowledge and welcoming. It's marginalized.
Yeah, it's assisted living.
You're a unique being in this thing. If you hold them that way, you're seeking that because it contributes to you in a particular way.
Well, even the rule of thumb in business is you want to do something, you find someone that's already done it and you go talk to them, find out how they did it. And 99% of the time.
It depends on your motive. Depends on the motive. See, an elder has a different, I won't say value system, but I'll say motives in engaging with people and business and the world. They don't have the same motive they had at 40. It's different.
Right.
They're not up for whatever, but they're up for something else that if it occurred in that other environment where people are 40 and 50,
sure,
if that were available, that would make a difference.
Let's step in the Wayback Machine for just a little bit and join Sherman and Peabody. And I'm sure you'll remember them. What you just said is intriguing. And if we can, and if you're willing, let's kind of look at maybe, you know, by decades or by maturation cycles and age-wise, the differences. When you were young and just beginning to kind of find your way and exploring, even if you were, that inner side of life, what was that like? And then we'll move on and compare the different.
Wow, life history.
Yeah.
I'll use what Joseph Campbell once said, if you see your steps clearly on the path, it's the wrong path.
Yeah.
I've taken so many steps, it makes sense now. It's where I ended up more than what I've accomplished or where I came from. But I think the question is valid. about, you know, the stages of life to be looked at and what occurs in those stages of life and how people think and what their motives are as we were speaking.
Sure. I think it's extremely important. So we have some, you know, relevance comparison, and especially generationally, because now the workforce is multi-generational and we need to pull it along.
Up to a point. So if there was, if there were an ad for a C-suite executive, CFO, and credentials, where have you worked? And then they get to their CV and they see it goes way back, and the person's probably in their late 60s or 70s. Where do they sit on their capacity to be considered for hire? Just that. Just that. That's the whole thing right there. That is a little shift there would be just so magical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start. Let's go back and look at how we might be able to maybe initiate that shift by looking at those age and maturation cycles and kind of what they are from.
Let's do it with you. You're the perfect person to do it.
Oh, come on. I'm supposed to be. Well, you're going to flip it on me.
Personalized.
All right.
So usually from 0 to 20, you're a student. I'll use the Eastern view of it because it kind of fits. So, you know, I'm a student. And then from 20 to 40, I'm a family man, a worker, making money, doing what I need to do, how I need to do it, take care of people, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, then there's the 40 to 60 where you go,
Right.
It doesn't give me what I thought it would. So you begin to look elsewhere because you've accomplished all the success that is accomplishable in that.
In the outer world.
In the outer world, exactly.
Right.
Because you go, okay, well, there's got to be more than this. What is that? And then you start to self-reflect. At the moment of the initiation of self-reflection, so maybe, it's over here.
Well, you mentioned talking to me or querying me on that point. When I was younger, I was much different in that at 18, I had a spiritual awakening. I prayed to know what truth was and was willing to die for it if necessary. And I was in my first year of pre-med and came back after first quarter and was just distraught. And I was empty inside. I wanted something. And so I prayed, and lo and behold, the following week, it got answered, and I was meditating, of course, in the 70s, you know, the in between classes and homework, there's always that period that usually includes an album side meditation. Well, I was listening to Journey's first album at the time, and in between the vocals and the vamp on one of the songs, this voice I'd been familiar with since I was a kid. Now, I was orphaned and adopted. Knew about that when my sister arrived when I was 4 and a half. She was also adopted. So it gave me some questions about life that most kids don't have. And so at this point, this voice asked me if I'm willing to die for what I believe in. And I thought for a moment, and I thought about Christ consciousness, felt a little empty, wasn't sure why, didn't question it, just moved on, settled on cosmic consciousness because it felt full. And so I said yes. And then I go through this process, and I return kind of with understanding there is no death, right? Because I could think all the way through it, even though I was out of body and who knows where the heck I was at. And then I was also given marching orders for my lifetime. And so I came back, and of course, blabbermouth that I was at that time, at 18, I told my parents about it because I was really excited, still confused about what happened, but I gleaned some points. One of the major ones that was that we are cosmic consciousness condensed into form, and figuring out, you know, how we become aware of that. And that happens in that self-reflection state sometimes too. Well, they had me see a psychiatrist. And after the third visit, the psychiatrist says, you know, you're not crazy. From all the things you've said to me, and of course he asked questions and listened well, he didn't interject, he just was a great listener, and that's rare. But he says, you're not crazy, you've had a spiritual awakening, for what I would term it. What's surprising is that it's so young, because most people don't go through a spiritual awakening until they're in their mid-40s, if they ever do. Well, at the time, I didn't understand that. When I hit the mid-40s, like, oh, empty nesters, kind of like what you were talking about. Everything else is done. It's like, now what, right? So I had this early on, and it has led me through the rest of my life. So my maturation cycles were a little different than most, and yet I could see others around me that were in that, for lack of a better, normal process.
If you wouldn't mind, I'm having trouble in this conversation. And being an elder, what I've given myself is permission to say how it is for me at the moment.
Sure.
Okay. What is the purpose of our interaction? What is it that you want to achieve for whoever watches or listens to this? What is that?
Purpose is to kind of examine your life in some respect and how you became aware of that inner and outer connection, how you were able to utilize it, make it practical and pragmatic, and then be able to offer something in some, you know, relevant way back to the world, to your clients, to other elders, and so on and so forth, which is originally what intrigued me, was your passion for sharing wisdom of elders and wisdom with elders in their
okay.
transition or preparation for transition.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So what do you want to know about me, what do you think the audience wants to hear? I'll ask it that way.
Well, let's start with, was there a time in your life when you were younger that you became aware that there was more connection that you had from an inner perspective than just what was happening in the outer world?
This would be a yes and a no. So no, intellectually, I did not grasp, think, or even have a sense of that.
Okay.
Somatically, yes. I would spend time in nature and found that to be the most comforting. So for me, it was that experience that where I was more mindless than I was when you're a kid, you have a lot going on.
Sure.
So that was my first insight. And, you know, I never found in my way of doing things, you know, anything happens. You know, they have sparks, but it takes a long time to get the fire started for me.
Sometimes it does, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and still, you know, when you're out in nature and you recognize that there's just no pun intended, there's a natural feeling that that emotes from within you of the balance, or maybe even just the pleasure of being in a place and space that is working together in harmony.
That's right. And that's what's lost between 20 and 40. And then when you get to that, what you stage that you so well pointed to at 45, and you go, so what's that missing? And then you notice that you're walking in the park and things are calmed down. You go, something. So the mystery begins to unfold.
So how did it unfold for you at that point in your life?
I did a lot of work back in the late 70s for transformational organizations. I trained with gurus and roshis, and I did the stuff that you did. I did all that wonderful, delicious.
I noticed you were a landmark facilitator too.
Yeah, I did that for a long time too. So it was all good. And then at some point, you know, if you see Buddha on the road, kill him. It's like, oh, okay.
Right.
And that's another moment of, oh man, what am I going to do? Am I really worthy to be able to be on my own?
Right.
Passage to go through. And it's a wonderful passage because it's painful, because you've got to stand on your own two feet as who you are, not as somebody else's representative. And I thought, that was not an easy time.
Yeah. And it makes sense, even though, you know, I call the process excruciatingly fun.
You would, but I just
we have to look back and just kind of reminisce and say, you know, it was what it was, and you know, it we were led. It's like the universe, you know, prepares the path for us. It's up to us to walk it.
I hold it differently. I come from a Jewish suffering family.
Ah.
So we love to have it be hard. And it's but if you can relate to the way you're going to do it anyway in a different way, if I'm going to go down this route, and there's good chance I will because I'm pretty conditioned, mm-hmm. Why do I have to hold it like a burden? Why can't I hold it somewhat in another channel and see how I do it? And so it doesn't become burdensome. It becomes something just you do. Life begins to be altered in a way where, mm-hmm. The way I'm working in elderhood is to reorient how one sees oneself and the world so that they have more peace and grace and tenderness and, oh, I see. Oh, huh. Okay. They mm-hmm. kind of lose the trying to hold on to what they think should be. And then that makes life a lot easier for them and me. It's like, oh, okay, she's that way. And that's the way she's going to be. Okay, how am I going to be with that one? And right. Then the business or the world or even the war that we're in right now, how am I every day? How do we be with that?
So you mentioned being in the transformational industry, let's say, especially at the corporate level. There are a couple of questions I have about that. One is, did you notice how oftentimes, even in your own process, and it was probably happening subtly at the time, that you were teaching what you needed to learn as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the other way. I was learning more than I was teaching. I would say it that way.
Yeah. Because
my clients were so smart because they would ask questions from locations in their way of being, from their career vantage point, mm-hmm. that I would never ask myself, that would test my, expand my capacity to understand, learn, and teach. They drove me to be more developed than I would have been without them.
Sure.
Amazing.
And even, I taught high school for a number of years, and in my teacher training, it was expressed, and statistically, you learn 40% passive, you retain 40% in passive listening, sage on stage kind of thing, and you retain 98% when you're teaching it.
Well, I would never look at percentages.
We're numbers world, right?
There's a difference in terms of the way I teach. I don't even like that word. I let things go through me into, there are eternal principles and things that I discover as I'm speaking to someone in the right condition, and I call it elder, in such a way that I didn't even know that I knew that. And it comes out, that's what higher wisdom is. It's a way of seeing something both at the same time in the parties that you speak and go, wow.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that is, yes, there is that flow that takes place that when you tap into something that is available and just ready to show itself when you're in that place, right? But not until.
Exactly.
So, and the questions really prompt that as well. Now, and your tradition is built on questions. Would you agree with that? The Jewish tradition?
The question is interesting because it's seeking a finite answer. I would say more for me, it's inquiry, which is more.
Thank you for the question. Yes.
Of discovery. It's like, oh, because I don't know. I don't even know the questions they ask sometimes. But I know something's missing, so I'll start sniffing down that tunnel and see what I find out. A lot of my life had been lived through and for others. And when you make this transition into being an elder, you kind of leave all that aside because they're not going to come with you anyway. And so mm-hmm. this kind of independence and freedom that you bequeath yourself, where you kind of go, oh, this is pretty cool being not having to see myself through others' eyes.
Right. I can do my own thing, don't have to answer to anybody, and work on that
right
additional perform, inquiry.
Perform like that.
Right.
And you just so this is, oh, okay, show's over. this is as good as it's going to get, man.
Now, do you see that kind of intelligence, wisdom, if you will, trickling down to younger generations now that seem to be developing?
I have a daughter who revealed many things about me, but don't make assumptions, please. So I have been married 35 years, just different people. So I've had the same lessons that everybody else has had.
Mm-hmm.
I have one daughter that's almost 50, and I have another daughter that is 28, going on 29, and she is wise. They both are. They both have insight. They both have abstraction. They both have, I mean, it's not as ripe as mine, but it's there. That's the brilliance of this whole thing, is wisdom lives within. Somebody's just got to, you know, take the layers off and let it away, let it go.
And do you think that's also stimulated by this, from a grander scale? You know,
yeah, it's been, absolutely.
Moving through space, we're in a different area than we were. There's this, you know, there's been a...
Yeah, impermanence is true.
Yeah.
Stays the same. So it's, you know, but the question for me is how there are people that I'm doing work in this area, and there are really great people who've done 42 years in their careers, and now it's kind of like, okay, I jumped off the cliff, but I don't have any wings. And so building the wings on the way down is a little bit more tumultuous than it would be when you kind of plan for it in advance. So there's work to be done on the front end of the back end, and then work as they jump.
Right. So,
you know, that things work out for them. It isn't as bad as they, there's just a, when I looked, and I had, my bottom line for marketing is, what question am I the answer for? So I had a lot of questions about aging and being, you know, all the things that were going on for me in my 60s. And then I spent my time and my focus on trying to figure it out for me. And what I discovered is it's for everybody. Now the question is, how do you translate that and move that into a transformative training, development, education format so that people can grasp it more effectively and more quickly than you had to go through it? Well, that was the challenge. But I know that everyone who hit 60s, or nearly everyone, had the same questions I did. So, you know, I figured that my answers are as good as anybody else's at this moment.
Well, and your statement there, you know, was true. We are, you know, like a namaste in Lakesh. We're all the same. We go through the same things. We have the same and or, you know, we may articulate them differently in our brains or in our minds, and yet they're still of the same direction and content, maybe even context.
And that's a very important thing you just said. So in other cultures, elders are accepted, not in our culture. It doesn't, you know, I've been to enough board meetings, made people lots of money, been to, did all the things with all the people. You know, I look around the room, there's some people in, you know, early 60s sitting on boards, maybe a little bit older, but they're not having an elder conversation. They're having the past conversation a little bit more crispy with more experience. But elders bring something else in terms of the relatedness of people to each other, so that they actually go deeper with each other to a point where they can communicate more effectively. Elders bring a lot of assets and resources that just are untapped. And so I think it may be from a physical viewpoint, worldly viewpoint, where the planets right. are going, this might be the time for this conversation to gain some power.
Absolutely.
By 2023, 20% of the population will be over 65. That's not too far away. If you're familiar with Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point.
Oh, absolutely. Great book.
Yeah. Well, we 65 and over is that we've tipped. We're into the major majority.
Yep.
We've got different set of power. How are we going to use it? Well, that's a whole other conversation.
Right. And you're just, you know, technically coming into that power. Now, what do you do with it? And there's really not been a lot of forethought, in my opinion, that maybe they may not be true, but from my experience, I'm 64, okay? So we've trusted, generations prior to me have trusted in the leadership and the things, and frankly, we're still, you know, in the States, we're a young culture compared to the rest of the world. So, and we've forgotten all the indigenous ways because we're all clustered here together and just trying to figure out how to work together now.
I don't think the indigenous ways, I spent some time with indigenous tribes in New Mexico and fell in love with everyone there and pretended I was one of them and all of that. But we're in a different, I think what you said was even more fundamental for me. We're all clustered together and we've forgotten our indigenous ways. That's probably true, but I don't know if you need to recover them. I think you need to create what's next, because this is going to be the way it is. This is going to be the way it is. I'm watching every town I've ever lived in grow up.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, you know, this is the way it's going to be. How can we alter how people relate to that which is going on around them in such a way that the hostility kind of calms down and people start to stop having to be right? And there's something I believe Elder could bring to the conversation of interrelationship, and I don't mean personal, I mean the way everyone lives their lives.
Absolutely. It's like Canfield says, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. And at this age, it's all small stuff. Always has been. Most of it doesn't even matter at this point. It's just the relationships that you engage and evolve with and hold sacred at this point, right? And now, is this, do you see a silver lining in what's happened with how we've been separated, sequestered, you know, obsessed with self-hygiene and basically being told we need to be afraid of each other? And now there's a shift taking place where people are going, wait a minute, we really do need each other. Now, how are we going to come back together more effectively and more harmoniously? Is that a fair question?
Let's see. It's a big question.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it was like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, this is an apocalyptic cat, so, you know.
Oh, man. For me, as I grow older, the moments become more precious. And so that preciousness allows me to discard my anxieties about the way out future, because I don't live there anymore. When I really looked at my development in this whole elder domain, I looked at where fear and anxiety live when they live in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or an interpretation of the past that puts them into the future, but they don't live them right now. So, you know, in elder, when you start to lose your identity, when you start to not having to be your personality, when you stop having to prove who you are to the world anymore, there's a certain release that happens. And there's a certain way to communicate with others that happens. There's a certain freedom that happens. There's a certain appreciation of life that happens, and you're much closer to the moment. And so that future doesn't bring as much discomfort to you as an elder if you do it right. By the way, I want to clarify, older does not mean elder.
Sure.
So that's in case someone in the audience goes, well, I'm an elder. No, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah, that would include a maturation beyond the
yes.
what you're talking about. Okay. And what's interesting is that that premise you just stated of just being in the present, right? No past, no future. It's been
proven. No, actually, I disagree with that.
Well, I misspoke on this. No past, no future. It's there.
It's there, right?
Right.
But it's not in the same presence if you're actually in the moment.
Right. And that was my point, that those, when you're in the moment, those don't matter as much, right? If at all, because you're so focused in the present. That doesn't mean you're not planning for the future. You're just able to be in the present and enjoy that moment as you're flowing towards the future.
I was just on a conversation before you with a CPA and my financial planner and trying to look at my taxes for, it's like, I live in the world too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting to, they say that you have a 1 in 400 billion chance of being born. That's in remarkable odds. You won the lottery, you're alive. And I think more of that is realized when you get into your 60s, you go, oh, wow, I don't have much tread left here. Better get going.
Yeah.
I better start enjoying and you can't be expansive about it. You have to be in the moment about it because the moment has greater richness.
And we live in one of the greatest times ever where we don't have to be really, fearful of anything, our health, our safety, security in most places, nutrition, medicine. The longevity's increased, and by the time I'm your age, we may live to be 150. Who knows?
Maybe you will. So there's a interesting doing work in particular areas about aging, and there's the life expectancy, which is close to 90 in our country, mm-hmm. but then there's the health one, which is 23 years behind. People start getting sick at 67 and they die at 90. So for those years between 67 and 90 is where all the healthcare dollars get spent. And so it becomes somewhat obvious, between life expectancy and health expectancy, something's going on here that if people were smart, they would begin to address. In my view, another takes care, is responsible for where they are in their life cycle. So they're not pretending to be young anymore because somehow that isn't doing anything. They're not young. And they're not pretending to be old because, what does that mean? In our culture, it means useless. So mm-hmm. they're not going there. An elder creates a path for themselves where their lives have meaning. They have purpose, they have drive, they have vision. Yeah, their bodies may give out. Maybe they're terrified about their minds going, but they'll relate to those late stage issues differently if they're right. elders.
Now, do you think that's due to the prior misunderstanding about nutrition and the...
talking about America. Everything is fried.
Fast food, muck enlightenment even.
I just finished the second reading. This time made more sense. Breath, have you ever read that book by Nestor? Chewing, I'm a dentist by training, as you said. And if you take a look at the dentitions of European descended people, they are terrible. But if you take a look at, Homo sapiens or aboriginals, they have perfect teeth. They don't snore. They don't have sleep apnea. Huh. So what is it about that we have processed food? Doesn't matter. We're not giving that up. That it's too easy. So, they're figuring out how to get back to that place of structural place where you can have a full dentition without braces. They're so close in doing magical work. They finally have come to the right place. Oh, I see. It's breathing. It's swallowing. It's muscle development. It's not just the teeth. So we could go all the way down that tunnel.
Sure. We're a holistic being, right? There's no part of us that's disconnected from other parts of us. They all work in unison. We've just never realized that the body's an instrument. We don't know how to tune it, let alone play it well.
We're getting better, though. The orchestra is beginning to get a little bit more masterful. I have my toes in healthcare because I am one, and I consult in that domain. And so I've worked with every kind of stakeholder in healthcare, from hospital systems to insurance companies to benefit managers to insurance companies to dentists to physicians. So I love what they're trying to do. They're good people. It's just, it takes so much effort to deliver what they could deliver, and so much resistance in working together to figure it out, that I could have a job till I'm 110. So it's okay with me. I like contributing to good people trying to make it work.
Right.
And they're trying. But you have government and you have unions and you have, you know, it's like, oh, it gets really complex very quickly. Plus, it's almost nonprofit, and that makes it really hard to operate.
I can understand that. You know, I've been in the aerospace, the education industry, the events industry, and, you know, what you're saying about getting people, places, and things to work together better is like pulling teeth.
So
it just happened. It's like, well,
first of all, the metaphor is okay with me.
Yeah. But
in the 50s in dentistry, they thought pulling teeth was going to make people better. So they pulled a lot of teeth in the 50s with kids, pulled their teeth backward. And now those people have airway and snoring and all kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
We learn from our mistakes. Unfortunately, it happens to be on human beings.
And in some cases, you know, even when the exploration of modern medicine, you know, that we don't like to see it this way, and I don't like war, but there are, you know, when you're going to war against something and you're trying to fight something, there's this level of acceptable casualties that are involved, or could be mistakes, or, you know, misgivings, or you know, not necessarily malpractice, but you're trying to do the best thing you can, but you don't necessarily always have the best tools or methodologies to do it with.
You don't know that you don't know until you know.
Exactly.
There you go. But the thing that I'm engaged with is to see how it's cyclical. The knowing is there, and then it is kind of morphs over time and then disappears and then comes back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a...
Well, you mentioned Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point.
Exactly.
There's a philosophy regarding the Mayan calendar and the whole 2012 and the shifting of ages and things of that nature. And there's the tipping point of that was the solstice of 2012. And the theory behind it was that there was an escalation of awareness and consciousness that took place in the previous 25-ish years. And that at that tipping point, then, now that which the curve was pretty much parallel to the information curve as far as how rapidly it developed globally. And now once that awareness and consciousness, which is kind of what we're talking about in the deeper nature of being human, it now that it's present in the individual, like T. Harv Eker says, what you do anywhere, you do everywhere. So you take that with you, whether you realize it or not, and it affects the environment and the people that you move into. So
that is all true. Who I am being communicates and generates relatedness in a way to other people.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be exponential. The things that you and I are talking about are going to occur over time.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if I'm begging to differ. I'll just differ in that I do believe it can be exponential, because there is that tipping point or hundredth monkey or
I understand all of that. I've been there when those moments have occurred. I'm just talking about global change.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's slow. It's like corporations, you know, they're dinosaurs. And when you have populations and people that change, now the change may come faster when there is enough pain and suffering to where you're done with that. And you just,
I don't know. You know, I think you're, yeah, that may be true. My view is you're dealing with an entity called human being.
Yeah.
Human being comes with all the mechanisms and social and family and cultural and peer, and you know, it's all mushed in there. And that mush is very hard to make into something else that is more solid. And there's a competency that's required and a need that's recognized for people to want to move into a higher level of awareness. But the being of human being is such that, at least my findings, are that not many people want to go that route at this point. It will grow, but be patient. We're in early adopters. It's like, okay, you ready to keep on going? Yes, I agree with you totally that who I am is the world and how I relate to the world. And you know, and we're breathing the same atoms that Jesus Christ had in his lungs. And you know, everything that you have done with your life has been remarkable. But now how many people have followed that path? Mm-hmm. So we do one at a time. And you know, you do what you can do. And you do what you can do.
Right. And I'm facing that. I just stepped into the executive director position for Global Peace Movement.
Yeah.
And when I came in, we had 30 chapters in 19 countries already. So I'm facing this kind of thing on a massive scale. It's okay, how do we, you know, inspire, engage, apply skill sets, and you know, give people the freedom to explore.
Helicopters over my
war
zone. I was telling, maybe it was you. I grew up on the SAC-MAC base. I mean, I did my 2 years in the Air Force, and like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something about it just has I have a physical reaction. It's interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm in awe of the things and the kinds of things that the machinery is able to do. And as I mentioned it, you know, one of my hats was partnering workshops or pre-construction team building workshops, issue resolution processes. And one of those was for the F-35 operations and maintenance facility here in Arizona. So, you know, it's kind of like dealing with what you've been doing and, you know, figuring out how to get the cats all together and, you know, not getting catnip, right?
It's okay.
Yeah.
Human beings give me a job. I don't mind. I like them.
I have fun with it. It's not something that just anybody can do, is stand in the middle of seeming chaos in order to organize people and get them to work together more effectively and do it in a structured way.
I think people want to. I've never had a problem getting people to work better together because they want to.
I agree.
Stuff out of the way.
Absolutely agree. And yet there has to be those processes to get them to.
Yeah, right. I'm not a process-oriented guy. I'm working with the club. That's how I do. I moved up the corporate consulting ladder. My history is interesting. So in 1978, I did a transformational course, EST at that point. A fabulous piece of
great work. Stuff.
And so I was in the audience and I noticed that much had changed in how I saw my parents, which is in my whole life, actually. But more critical to me was the guy up front, Randy McNamara. And I said, he's transforming 283 people's lives, just doing what he's doing. And I couldn't let it go. And then I began to participate, and pretty soon I was leading their programs because I wanted to break the code. And it was really important. I don't know why, it was my passion. And it took me a while, and then I went, oh, I see what it's based on. There's an algorithm
Yeah.
And if you understand the algorithm, you can create with the algorithm. So I began to own it in a different fashion. And I started to apply it in consulting. And I did it first in my industry, but then I was soon doing it in healthcare throughout. And then pretty soon I was, you know, doing my thing because people wanted to work.
It's pretty new. When you give them the tools, permission, leadership, and freedom to do so, you know, you say when you get people to work, happy people do more with less supervision than you could ever imagine, and they will blow your expectations away.
I use a different word. I call it responsible people, because I don't care if they're happy. Happiness is a feeling that comes and goes.
Well, if you enjoy what you're doing, let's just say that.
I had a great day and I had a shitty day at the same time. I had things come up and it was like, oh, okay, I'll handle that.
Moment by moment, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Moment by moment. Like, oh, here they are. They're calling again from who to do and what is going on and how come they're not on Zoom? And then I have the great times being with my clients and my elder groups. And it's like, hey, you know. It's whole, you know. You can't have up without down. You can't have good without bad. You can't have good times without bad times, but you can always be responsible.
Right. So, well, it's like finding the order in chaos. There is order there. You just have to be patient enough for it to reveal itself.
Or you can just be responsible that it's not revealing itself at this moment. Keep on looking. It's not your fault.
Right.
It's the way it is. Okay. But the whole thing, I being an elder has been wonderful. It gives you a kind of peace and grace.
What's after being an elder?
What's that?
Well, you said it's been. I said, well, what's after being an elder?
Yeah, I don't want to have been in anything yet. Soon enough. One of the things we're doing at our retreat is we have to talk about death and dying, because people's relationship to death and dying is really interesting. It's never going to happen to me. And then we have four people, maybe five in this retreat, that are imminent. I'll use that word, you know, heart condition or cancer. They're
clock's ticking.
When I'm around people like that, life becomes more precious.
It certainly does.
You know, and so if you knew that, you know, this group that you're in, if they were in that experience that, you know, tomorrow might be it for you, how would you treat each other? But they can't, it's hard for them to get into that domain of compassion and caring. They're in the domain of I got to produce results. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting. How do you intercede? How do you come into that arena where the heart opens up as opposed to the head? I think Elder could do it. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that some way. I mean, I'm still in some ways feel really young and like.
Yeah, you are.
I don't know yet. And thank you. You know, I mentioned earlier that I was adopted at 61. I met my birth mother.
Wow, how was that?
She was still full of regret. She had not let it go. And I think because of that, she'd given herself not one, two, but three different forms of cancer that she had battled and won temporarily. And yet I was her final item on her bucket list.
I know. I have a brother that's in the same territory. And he's only 2.5 years my elder. And I have lived my life in a way that to really be prevention oriented for the last at least 10 years, maybe 15, maybe 20. So I've always exercised, I've always been fat dieting, you know, from vegetarian. Right. But I finally found, you know, the things that work for me. And what part of what we're doing, there's a, if you want to spend a moment of time, just go to Blue Zone. They have an opening page and talks about longevity and staying healthy and going through life. And they have their 5 or 6 distinctions, which are pretty accurate.
I'll make sure that's in the description, the notes.
But there's so much out there. There are programs in neurobiology and nutrition, and I have a nutritionist, and he's just wonderful. And we figured out the best food for me. Mm-hmm. It's different for everybody. You gotta see.
The interesting thing now, because of our own technology and our growth and our understanding of that, and our ability to decipher what the body's needs are, we never used to know that. Right?
Well, no, it's interesting. So I have a medical.
I love how.
I have a concierge physician.
Okay.
It's worth it to me to be able to pick up the phone and talk to somebody.
Sure.
Than having to make an appointment. So I'm inpatient. So Lester's he's just magical, but he's Western medicine. He's wonderful as a Western medicine guy. He's Stanford trained, smart as a whip, evidence-based, mm-hmm. knows how to use the literature, knows how to do the search engines, really does his job. But in terms of me taking care of myself, he's just one slice of the pie. Because I have other providers that I have encircled myself with that give me those things that I need that he would never give me. But he's not wrong or bad. He's just doing his thing.
Sure.
I'm responsible for my health, not him.
Right. Well, so, the specialization allows you to get a little deeper quality, perhaps, of each one of those areas.
Exactly. The distinction is that in our culture, I'll say it this way. One thing an elder realizes is that the cavalry isn't coming. They're not coming. They're not. And when you get, then I guess it's me. I guess, yeah, you better get smart about yourself and your body and start figuring out what works for you. And they do, because they're already working on it. I mean, it's not like they're not on the path. They just haven't cued it down to be able to make appropriate choices for themselves.
Sure. Now, do you see in accordance or in tandem with the cycles of maturation, it's been said that most of us live from our shoulders up, that we're unaware of what's going on in the body, let alone paying attention to the sensation.
Yeah, I would imagine that might be true, because it seems impenetrable until you're in your 50s. Mm. Things start to, it's like, it's like my old Mercedes-Benz. It kind of says, I'm giving up.
Could it be a matter of how we learn to pay attention, or how we're raised or educated in doing so, and our educational system doesn't pay any attention to that?
It's America. It's Oreo cookies. Yeah. You're not going to get any funding for that. I think the conversation elder, again, would make a difference here.
How so?
If the parent-child communication is often not deeply heard, either side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's okay, because that comes, they got to go to work. They're in their 20s, the 40s, they're in the 60s, they're gone. They have to feed keep the wolves away.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids have to grow up in this mess we call our culture. And so there's a certain domination that happens with peer. First of all, you don't get abstractions until you're in your 20s. So they listen differently to what people are saying. They just do. Or they don't hear. They hear so selfishly and comparatively that they can't express full empathy for anyone beyond their peer range. It's right. Difficult to talk to those kids.
And as parents or elders, when you try to offer wisdom without them asking the question, right, there's no attention whatsoever. There's no listening.
Exactly. That's a wisdom statement and an elder statement. Yeah, you have to have the listening in place to be able to communicate.
And you also need to understand your audience when you're attempting to communicate. Otherwise, they're not going to listen either.
I don't think elders have problems, real elders have problems gaining the audience. I was on the Pueblo and I was watching elders work, and it was like, oh, okay. Because there's a certain sense of sanctuary and safety, and I'm okay the way I am, and I'm an asshole teenager and he loves me anyway. It's like,
right.
Oh, okay, that's really remarkable. And so he just said, and there's no judgment in an elder speaking. He's just speaking. He says, you know, I don't know about you, but what I've noticed or my life has been. So he doesn't make it something wrong with the other person. Elders learn how to communicate effectively where it doesn't harm other people.
It's interesting. It fits right in with the live and let live philosophy, the movement I was talking about earlier. There's two sides of the live, which addresses the legal side and doing away with aggression in any form.
I'm glad you took this on.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I was destined to do so. It fits really well for my life.
I come from it another way. That may be true. I just think it was a choice that was ready to be made.
Well, the other side of it, the let live, which is there's a legal and a moral principle. The let live side of it is like you're talking about with the elders, that there's no more bias, there's no prejudice. You know, they're okay with themselves and they're okay with you as long as you're not aggressing. Right, as long as you don't have to defend yourself. You know, whatever you do is fine as long as you're happy or you know, it's not affecting others and you live your life.
I think there's a larger sphere in which you just said all that is true. But if the listening isn't there, if there is a way that you are hearing them speak, where you get righteous or, you know, and that you have been there and I know more than you and, you know.
Right, that's when ego comes up and the battle begins.
Right, well, there's no battle, there's a curtain. And the curtain is,
right.
Is the iron curtain. And elders are okay to open their hearts and love others without wanting to be rewarded. They just go, oh, you know, I know the pain I was in when I was 14 years old. Are you kidding me? I live my life for everybody else but me. And I understand how uncomfortable that can be.
Yeah.
And no one talks about that because they're not going to talk about it around the dinner table. I can tell you that. Because it's not a conversation. And they won't talk about it in peer group.
Sure. Well, and as parents, you live for your kids and you just do whatever is necessary, even in the job or profession. Right, you may have gone to school and gotten and been in the area of your expertise and found out that, oh, I really don't like this. And yet that you still have to do that in order to, you know, feed the wolves, so to speak. And you're feeding Crom Wolf at that time.
I'm listening to country and Western music now for some reason. And I've become a Chris Stapleton fan and I've got my 10-gallon hat and I'm just going crazy. I'm loving it. I need to start moving this to a close. Did you get what you needed out of this particular conversation?
Oh, I got more than I'd ever dreamed having. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks again so much for your time. And I really appreciate the wisdom that you were able to offer the audience. And I'm sure it's been impactful. I know it has been.
You know, the thing that I love is being able to talk about it, because every time I have to talk about it, I say it more clearly.
Yeah, so refining.
That opportunity was wonderful for me too. All right, you be well, young man.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Namaste. In La Ketch. Thanks so much for staying with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I will see you next time.